Well, hey, everybody. This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Developments, makers of Out of the Park Baseball 21, the world's best baseball strategy game, available today from Steam or directly from OOTPdevelopments.com. Just $39.99 gets you the best baseball strategy game ever made. That's right. And you don't even need to listen to the marketing guys telling you about it. Just check out all the reviews on Steam, how well received it is. Out of the Park Baseball 21 has absolutely shattered sales records and user records and every other kind of record you can possibly think of this year. It's been an amazing run, and we couldn't do it without you. So check out of the Park Baseball 21. Also, Franchise Hockey Manager 6 is on sale right now for 50% off. Just $19.99 gets you an amazing NHL-licensed PC strategy game, unique in the market, nothing else like it anywhere. And once again, it's on sale right now, 50% off. Franchise Hockey Manager 6, you can also get that from Steam or from our website directly at OOTPdevelopments.com. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Press Row Podcast. I am Rich Grisham, and I am really excited because we have our good friend, Scott Drader from Metalhead Software, the makers of Super Mega Baseball 3, joining us today. Scott, how are you?
I'm good. It's great to be back on here. We haven't chatted too much for almost a couple of years now, so I'm looking forward to catching up with you.
Yeah, me too. We've known each other for a long time. We might be going on like 10 years now. It's like legitimately possible. When did, and I want to start with Super Mega Baseball 3, but real quick, when did the first Super Mega Baseball come out? What year? Do you remember? And I know it sounds silly.
I won't forget that one. Yeah. December 2014. Okay. We met way before that, though.
Right. At a PAX East in like 13 or 12, I guess, probably,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that was 13.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so we're at 7+ years then.
No, and we met on the internet before that, so right. Maybe more like now, yeah.
Right. So a long time. So I'm very happy to have you here. But let's start with right now. Super Mega Baseball 3 is now available worldwide, right? It's available everywhere, and it's on everything, right? It's on PS4, Xbox One, Switch, PC, right? Do I have that? Am I missing
anything?
Yeah,
we've been out for just over 48 hours now, and this was the first time that we did a four platform simultaneous launch, so the three big consoles plus PC all on the same day. So that was crazy, but we're stoked about that, and yeah, worldwide for the most part.
So number one, congratulations. That's awesome. You deserve to give yourself a bit of a pat on the back for that. Releasing a game during the middle of a global pandemic is complicated. So, again, congratulations. Well done. Go ahead.
I was just going to say thanks so much. And, yeah, I mean, we're obviously pretty lucky to be one of the studios that just our timing lined up okay. We had kind of the big push that you do before you start sending builds in for approvals and whatnot on the consoles. We had kind of just finished that push right when it was time for everyone to go back and start working from home. And sounds like maybe you've run into a little bit of that same stuff as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, when you're a company that makes digital video games, you rely on many third parties that you have no control over. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a little bit about what you're talking about there. So let's start at the beginning with Super Mega Baseball 3. Everyone that I know that is playing the game loves it, right? Our good friend Chris Jardine, Snaggle J, loves it. Our pal Sumit Sarkar from Polygon loves it. My man TJ loves it. Brian Weedeye, Pasta Padre, loves it. What has your sense been from the fans, the players of the game? What's your feedback been? What's your take on the reception, the public reception, the people who are paying money to play it? What's been your take on how people have thought of Super Mega Baseball 3 at release?
We're absolutely delighted by the feedback we've seen so far and just the buzz that's around on social media, a subreddit and so on. We're totally stoked by that. My brain is still in like launch week mode. So we're looking at all the feedback, all the bug reports that are coming back in, and what are we going to do next? What do we got to fix first? How are we going to get this stuff deployed? So my brain's still in kind of that immediately after launch mode, but, when it slows down this weekend, hopefully a little bit, I'm really happy. And I think the team's really happy on what we've seen so far.
So Super Mega Baseball as a brand is known for several things. It's known for being just a highly functional mechanics, like really good batting mechanics, really good pitching mechanics, really good fielding mechanics. It's also known for being over the top with its art style and its big, beautiful stadiums and lively crowds and, funny animations, and reactions from players. It's known for, obviously, the wildly differing art styles of the players themselves, male, female. It's known for lots of configuration and customization, right? It's known for a lot of different things. That's as a franchise. For Super Mega Baseball 3 itself, what were your goals for the game, and were those goals met?
So with 3, I mean, it's always been a balancing act of trying to get some of those things that you mentioned, get them balanced in a nice way. How do we want the gameplay to feel, and how do we want the presentation to present that gameplay, trying to get that stuff all balanced. With 3 though, comparing it to 2, version 2 was involved several massive technical transformations of the way the game worked. We changed the proportions of the characters, which means that all your animations kind of have to be redone or patched up. We added online mode to a game that was entirely engineered to be a single player game initially. And we generally changed the look of the game massively. So there was that project was just wildly technically challenging. We're jumping across several technical chasms. And when we sat down in our first few conversations about what are we going to do with version 3, we said, let's try to do a little bit less of the massive technical transformations and focus on, hitting all those a lot of smaller features that we've wanted to do for a really long time. They were probably in the initial spec for Super Mega Baseball 2, and we just didn't have time to finish them. So we got to come back and address all these things that a bunch of people in the studio have wanted to do for a really long time. And I think I'm really happy with the result. I mean, certainly our hardcore community sees all of that stuff and is knows that it's a much more rounded, more complete product now after all of that.
So as you sort of look at the game now and compare it to the original Super Mega Baseball and Super Mega Baseball 2, and obviously there's more features, right? There's a deep franchise mode now. But like sort of feature and function aside, as you sort of compare and contrast the two, what about Super Mega Baseball 3? And maybe it is a feature, a specific feature of features. What about Super Mega Baseball 3 sort of fills out the, the vision that you had for this franchise when you first started it, clearly 10 plus years ago when you began on your journey, right? Like if you were showing Super Mega Baseball 3 to Scott Drader from 10 years earlier, would 10 years younger you look at that and say, that is the vision that I have? Like, I'm curious, sort of, how do you compare and contrast the first to the newest?
Yeah, well, where 3 kind of fills in the blanks compared to 2 and 1 is that it's got that deeper, longer term single player experience there, and then all the online play, all those social experiences that come through the co-op gameplay and the competitive gameplay, those have hit a state that are just generally so much more polished than, online play was brand new in number 2. So no matter how hard you try, it's something that's going to, you know, when online's brand new, there's going to be a lot of issues to work through. And we've seen so far, you know, I'm crossing my fingers that we don't see any major issues in the coming days here, but you know, the online play is in a really good spot, right at launch. And that, you know, just the fact that there's that variety of experiences, short-term single player experiences, long-term single player experience with franchise mode, tons of cooperative gameplay across all the game modes. And then the competitive mode is there and, you know, in a pretty, pretty good spot for, you know, 48 hours after launch. And then we've got this, custom pennant race mode coming in about, is this what we said, early summer. So, you know, after June 21st, sometime around there, that mode's going to be a game changer. And, you know, when that's in there and that's allowing people to create custom pennant races and play something that's similar to an online league with their friends, I think that's a game changer for the series. And yeah, I just feel like we've kind of hit a lot of those important different experiences that different types of players are looking for.
Love it. So Super Mega Baseball 3 is a big game. There's a lot to it. You've also made a really bold decision with releasing a demo that is not a small slice of the game or a timed, right? You know, you only get X number of hours. You've released a demo that lets you play unlimited pennant race against people. That is a really bold decision. I'm curious as to sort of the process behind releasing a demo. Number one, because demos these days are very rare. And then number two, you know, the very strategic decision to let it be unlimited play of a certain kind of mode, which also happens to be an online mode. I love it. And I'm interested as to the sort of the decision tree process, where you started and where you wound up.
Right. Yeah. Good question. There's a couple of things there. One, I think like putting out a demo that gives access to a lot of the game, and especially just like the online portion only, that expresses a lot of confidence about how well it plays. And we wanted to put a strong foot forward there and say, hey, look, you know, like come jump into our online mode. We think that you're going to have enough fun in there to want to buy the game. That's one part of it. And the other part of it is just that we know, you know, that it's really important to have a lot of users in the online community right away to have a thriving, you know, competitive community. So that problem with SMB2 was solved by the fact that we shipped into Games with Gold on Xbox and were cross-platform. So that had, you know, allowed a large influx of users to the game right at the beginning and got things going right away. And we knew that, you know, if we can let people come in and have the experience of playing this game online, not only do we think that they're going to enjoy themselves and want to have the whole game, but also that's going to benefit everyone else in the community who's already bought it by giving them more players to play against, faster matchmaking times, and so on.
One of the things that has been a hallmark of the series from the beginning is that it's got all kinds of players, right? It's got men and women. It's got, you know, big guys, small guys, you know, various skin colors and tones, right? It is, you know, and it's not a, I'm not trying to get political or anything, but it's just really very, without making a big deal out of it, it just sort of invites everybody to the table. I know we've talked about it before. I know that was a strategic decision you've made. You've continued to move that forward. Every team is full of guys and girls and again, all sorts of different shapes, sizes, and skin tones. I would imagine that you probably hear some, you know, kudos and congratulations on that. But like, is that like a big feature selling point? Do a lot of people talk to you about that? Or is it just like, oh, no, this is just the game and it's not even like that big of a deal anymore? I'm curious what you hear from people about that aspect of Super Mega Baseball.
From our perspective, I mean, I guess those decisions were made so long ago now that it's just kind of, it's part of what the brand is now. And we don't even think about it too much. The users that we have that have been around for a long time are used to it too. So we're not thinking about it too much, but, obviously if that can help broaden the appeal and you know, open the game up to people in the broader video game audience and not just the baseball or sports audience, that's a win for us. But yeah, we don't think about it too much anymore. It's just kind of, it is what it is now.
The ecosystem is another unique characteristic of of Super Mega Baseball. It has been since the very beginning, right? Sort of, it is like sort of the way for you to control in real time the difficulty of the game, as well as sort of the risk reward system. Did you make any tweaks, modifications to that of significance for Super Mega Baseball 3, or was the ego system sort of in the right place where you wanted it to be? You know, it's such a important aspect of the game. I'm curious, was there a lot of modifications to it, or, you know, between 1 and 2 shipping and post game release, you sort of had it where you wanted it to be?
So with 3, one of the things we had to deal with was the fact that a relatively small percentage of the community was playing and had reached the level of 99 on 2, and in Pennant Race they're being matched up at 99 and they're handling the game at 99, which is totally ridiculous, and I don't understand how that's possible, but that's where they were at. So we had to extend the range a bit. So now we renamed some of the difficulty graduations on the ego system a little bit, but pretty much like 90 is ballpark where 99 was before. It might even be a little wider than that. It might be more like 88 was where 99 was before. But we had to make some room for people that have become unreasonably good at the game. That was a big one. And then just in general, some of the new mechanics, no doubt, will be, you know, watching what the community is saying and taking feedback and making sure that the difficulty feels balanced across the different mechanics. So it's hard to say in the first few days after launch, because you're getting a lot of feedback about people that are jumping in, and you know, if it feels different from the previous version, that can be initially frustrating. So we try to separate, we're trying to, you know, let people have enough time with it that we can find out, is it that this feels different from before and you haven't gotten used to it yet? Or is it actually not as good? Or is it changed in a way that's not for the better? And, you know, there's a certain time window needed for that, and we'll listen and see. But, all of that will, you know, come back in and factor into our decisions about if we tweak the difficulty or, you know, how the ego system affects various mechanics, some of the new mechanics in the game.
So, I mean, I know how we do it at Out of the Park Baseball, right? But we release a game every single year, and we have, you know, a 21-year legacy of fans and games, and we have forums that have been around for 15-plus years, and we've got Discord and Twitter and Facebook. And again, when you release a game every single year and you're delivering new content every week, you know, you're constantly talking to your fans and your players and stuff like that. With Super Mega Baseball, it's a franchise. It's the third game. But it's a different kind of thing. It's not an every single year release, right? You go a couple, 2 or 3 years between games. I think a lot of people think that we at Out of the Park Baseball have some like incredible data science analytics tool that we look at and we measure, you know, down to the nth degree, you know, user engagement, which, you know, it's a term a lot of people, including myself, you know, don't even really understand, right? What is engagement exactly, right? But, you know, I think a lot of people think that that, you know, when you're in the video game industry, you have at your fingertips these incredibly deep, powerful analytics. You know, at Out of the Park Baseball, most of our sort of, you know, feedback loop is just us talking directly to our fans. Now, with what you guys have in Super Mega Baseball 3, you know, what sort of feedback loop are you utilizing? Is it talking to fans? Is it scouring forums? Is it, you know, your own, you know, social media? You know, do you have analytics that you can just sort of look at that give you aggregate and detailed data? I'm interested, when you say look at the feedback, what are the different ways and tools that you use to look at that feedback?
That's a really interesting question. I'd love to hear more about how you guys do it offline here, but we actually just got out of a meeting 2 hours ago about how we're going to process all, I mean, now that we're all working from home right now, how are we going to make sure that all this feedback that's happening on the subreddit, on the Steam forums and so on, which is like, you know, starting to get beyond what we can, any one person can entirely watch themselves. We just got out of meeting. How do we take all this information, channel it to the dev team, and then, you know, channel the decisions and the, what are we aware of? What are we working on? How do we, you know, effectively communicate that information back to the community. We were just trying to figure that out today. So it's an ongoing thing that you deal with. But I mean, the game just came out, so there's a huge volume of information mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. We're internally trying to sort out our communication process. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's absolutely no replacement for just reading what people are saying, listening to what people are saying. But we do also have, especially since shortly we started implementing, and we didn't have a ton of analytics in SMB2 when it launched, mm-hmm. but we started adding them heavily throughout the development process and have a pretty comprehensive system now. So that information, it isn't a replacement for user feedback, but it can augment the feedback that you get, and you can really, you know, you can go in there and look and see, you know, does the data behind what's happening in games, what the outcomes of games are, you know, do these statistics align with the feedback that's being given? Mm-hmm. And it really can back the when you get feedback from users, which sometimes can be heavily emotionally fueled. Sure. It might be exaggerating an outcome that they just had happen today, mm-hmm. even though it wasn't so bad the previous day. Or sometimes it even emphasizes, sometimes it can strengthen their point. And, you know, they might say something, you know, you look at the data and they're like, wow, no kidding. They have no idea mm-hmm. how right they are about that particular thought. So mm-hmm. I think the two interact nicely. And yeah, I mean, the having the data and the emotional feedback, and well, it's not, I mean, some of the users, I'm not saying their feedback is only emotional, but they work hand in hand, and no doubt analytics have become an important part of our decision-making process, but there's no replacement for reading all the things, which we try to do.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you from experience, once you've got it figured out and once you have a plan in place and you know how to do it, everything is going to change. So whatever you're doing, just know that it'll continue to change every single, feels like every 6 months, there's just a completely new different way to either get information or interact with people or both of those things. So good times. But yeah, so, okay, cool. So that's Super Mega Baseball 3 is, again, it's a unique kind of a game. It's really in some ways a throwback to, you know, the kinds of games that we saw before. But also, in other ways, it's also very much forward-looking. I want to talk to you a little bit about your studio, right? We've done, and if you look through this RSS feed, you've been on here, I'm going to say, at least 8 times in various incarnations. So we've talked about this before. I don't want to sort of go over territory that we've had deep discussions about. But on the other hand, you know, you started your studio, and it was the definition of starting by your bootstraps. I know one of the conversations you said, yeah, for a while it was, you know, it was me and the other guy in the company and my girlfriend living in the same house, you know, sharing everything and space and in food. And, you know, it was like the definitive, you know, indie studio startup story. Fast forward to today. What is your studio look like today? What does Metalhead Software look like? How, you know, and I'm not looking for any inside info, but like how many people, generally speaking, you know, what's the studio like in May of 2020, especially compared to what it was when you first started about a decade ago?
Well, I'm sitting in the exact same downstairs corner of my townhouse that I did when we started.
There you go. So you've just taken those multiple millions of dollars that you made and just put them in the bank like a smart person. Got it.
Yeah. We're back, Christian and I. I'm right in the same corner of the downstairs where Christian and I started writing the first lines of code. But there is a studio downtown. That's empty, well, mostly empty right now, which is nice. But yeah, how has the studio changed in terms of the team and whatnot? You know, it was just the two of us at first in the early days, and we were doing not just laying foundational work for SMB, but doing work for hire for some previous employers and whatnot to pay the bills and everything. Now, though, the studio, we're 17 people now. So it's been really nice to be able to, I mean, one of the best things that comes with having a bigger studio, a lot of things change, but we can move a lot faster now. And, you know, not in terms of both the people that are there, but also the knowledge we've built up, the tech that we've built up internally. It's just such a better platform for doing new things. My favorite thing about being a bit of a more mature studio now is that when it's time and when a new idea comes up and we want to get it in the game, there are less total unknowns about how to make that happen. That's my favorite thing about being a bigger studio now, is that we can pursue more ambitious ideas and not have it out on a horizon that's like 2 years away kind of thing. That's my favorite thing. But yeah, we're 17 people now. Lots of folks that have been around for a long time, stay with the studio for many years. I want to say we're around 12 or so with the SMB2 launch. We're about one third people programming technical background. Christian and I still write quite a bit of code when we have time, no doubt. And then, yeah, a third of the team, art or so, and then a third of the team split across quality assurance and our community management, marketing, operations type stuff. So that's kind of a rough breakdown of what it looks like now. And I should not discount at all. We got a handful of people that aren't, you know, employees of the company, that would, you know, regular contributors that have been doing work on the game on a contract basis over the years. Tetrahedral Interactive, who are also in town, and Ron DiPrisco has done our soundtrack on the last two games as well.
Nice. Yeah, no, there's no way you make a game in you know, this era without both full-time folks and contractors and you know, other sort of assistants, you know, non-full-time, you know, people. For certain amounts of time you need certain kinds of things and then you don't. So that's interesting. Do you ever give yourself a chance to sit back and realize what you've accomplished, right? Like you are now responsible for nearly 20 people having great jobs and incomes and the kind of life that they wanted to have. You've built your own company literally from scratch. You are a huge success. Do you get a chance to sort of sit back and at least like acknowledge to yourself, wow, I really have accomplished something amazing? And by the way, you're not, in your 60s. You're a young dude who's got a whole lot of stuff that you can do in front of you. Like, you must feel, I hope you take a little bit of time at least to sort of, I don't want to say congratulate yourself, but at least just sort of realize what it is that you've accomplished. Because a lot of people that I talk to that have accomplished similar kinds of things, including, you know, Marcus, who runs Out of the Park Baseball, I don't think they do that. Not that you need to walk around, you know, hey, everybody, look at me. But like every once in a while, do you get a chance to sort of take a step back and realize what you've accomplished in a relatively short amount of time?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's good in general to take an hour each day and just kind of appreciate where you're at and what good fortune you have had, for sure. Of course, we're always thinking about what's next if I start thinking about how happy I am or how happy my co-founder Christian is and stuff, but you know, we immediately start thinking about, you know, does the rest of the team feel that way? What can we do to have the rest of the team?
Well, that's why you're good. That's why you're good, right? Because you think that way. And I'm not like blowing smoke. I'm legitimately serious, because I've worked with people like that and I've worked for people that aren't like that. And successful, you know, CEOs and people who run companies have to constantly be thinking about the future, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also important, I think, and I'm beating a dead horse, but it's also important to sometimes realize what it is you accomplished. And sometimes it takes somebody else saying, hey, did you realize that you did this, for it to hit. But it's an amazing accomplishment to build. I mean, look, the video game industry is very difficult to succeed in. The sports video game industry is even more difficult to succeed in, and you've figured out a way not only to succeed as an individual but as a company, and that's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive.
Thanks, man. I mean, I'm gonna take some time this weekend. I'm gonna get a 6-pack of beer, and I'm gonna play about a dozen Pennant Race games on my PS4, which is about 10 feet away from where I'm sitting right now, and I'm gonna enjoy the weekend for sure. But nice. At the end of the, you know, I think some of the most satisfying and, you know, the happiest you can feel in this space is when you feel like the people, your customers, and when your teammates are feeling jacked up about it. That's my favorite.
So another thing that's happened over the course of 10 years, right, is the industry has completely changed. I mean, completely changed. When we first started talking, it was about unit sales, right? You make money by selling copies of your game, period. Now, that's still important, but there's also these things like subscription services, which you have some experience with. As you mentioned, you launched on Xbox Games with Gold when Super Mega Baseball 2 hit, right? And there's subscription services everywhere, right? PlayStation has theirs, has a couple. Microsoft has theirs, a couple. You've got PC subscriptions, you know, from multiple places. And of course, you've also got the ability to generate additional revenue in-game through in-game purchases or in-app purchases. Has the changing nature of the industry modified how you do business, or is your sort of approach for designing, building a game, building your roadmap, sort of knowing, generally speaking, what's coming the next couple, 2 or 3 years, has that not really impacted you and how you do what you do, other than having to make choices, right, about how you're going to distribute your game?
There's ongoing, I'm sure you're there too, there's just ongoing conversations about what the best approach is. I guess in some senses, or some sense, we've kind of retreated to a little bit more of a straightforward business model with this game. We did DLC with the last one at launch and a bunch of DLC afterwards. And this time we're just like, you know, one thing gets you all the things. It's a bit more of the old school way of doing it, I suppose. One thing gets you all the things, and we're going to do free updates for some amount of time. And, but we're always thinking about that. You know, we thought it fit with our brand and what our community likes about our studio and stuff to go with a pretty straightforward model on this one. But, you know, we'll obviously reevaluate and think about what we're going to do for the next game.
So we have a bunch of different questions from listeners. So I'm going to go through some. This one comes from Twitter user Norawas. He says, do you, and referring to you, Scott, do you play tournaments in the company? Who's the best in the company, and how big is your ego?
I'm gonna get some negative feedback from the team for this, but I'm going to say that when I'm practiced, I'm the best player in the studio. Richard Gibson's going to give me, he's going to send me an angry Slack message as soon as he hears this, this podcast. But and on the current, you know what? So leading up to the launch, I haven't played enough hours to actually know what the limit is. And we were obviously making difficulty tweaks right till the bitter end here. So not bitter end. I shouldn't say that's the wrong word to use, but I'm going to find out over the next little while here. A good thing to do, obviously, after you ship. We've been busy developing the game, and we still are. And no doubt there'll be plenty of time actually working on the game. But I'm going to try to make sure there's some time set aside to just sit down and play it and actually, you know, experience for myself what we're reading on the game's subreddit and so on. But I beat 1 on 99. Like full season championship on 99.
Wow.
Didn't quite get there on 2. And you know, my first goal on this one, I'm going to try to take a championship at about, I think I can do 90.
Okay.
But 95, I don't know. We'll see.
Bridge too far. Good
getting
stuff.
Getting older too. The reflexes are,
dude, you know,
every year takes one ego point off the list.
Truer words never spoken. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. All right. This one from HDR Game Reviews. He says, this is awesome. I am very interested in how these teams and players get created. What are the inspirations to some teams and players from the Super Mega Baseball series?
we've had an enormous amount of fun with that aspect of the game. We had a list of like 50 or 100 players. Probably before we were even writing code. This was like back in the day, Christian and I were like hanging out on the beach. I think we were drinking beers that day or something. I was just like, all right, if we do this baseball idea, what it's not going to be licensed. So let's start making some funny names and coming up with some pun names and stuff. So for sure, there's just, you know, it's been an, and at this point, I think like almost everyone on the team that's been around for more than a year or so has shot ideas into our, we got kind of an ongoing list of names that just, you know, are fun and that people will kind of have a little snicker at. So we've had a lot of fun with that. A lot of them are puns, obviously, but a lot of them are just kind of fun to say. And, you know, the new version of the game has, a PA announcer that actually announces the name of all of the standard players, which is like 400 and something of them. I had a pretty good laugh with that and couldn't have enjoyed doing that feature more. But yeah, the ideas are from all over the place. They're from many different team members. And it's a part of the game that we have a lot of fun doing.
This one from Brendan Hagen. He says, what's an improvement, a tweak, or an Easter egg you thought was awesome when you designed it, but you haven't really seen a community response about it? He also says, I love that away pitchers get booed for throwing pickoffs. Great little touch.
Ooh, I'd have to think about that one, you know, like a feature that went in that didn't quite resonate or didn't quite get noticed, or an Easter egg that's hilarious. There's some good jokes on some of the advertisements in the stadium that you don't catch in most of the gameplay camera angles. We're going to try to do something about that in one of our updates coming soon. But
interesting. That's cool.
But there's some funny stuff that I think my answer to that is going to be that there are good jokes that are not there. You know, the camera just sweeps by them real quick. You'd almost have to record it and slow it down to see the joke. So, yeah, but we're going to try to do something about that.
Cool. Very good. This one from John D. He says, great job, guys. Any chance for a multi-year contracts in franchise mode? So this is what happens, right? And there's nothing wrong with it, right? People want more. It's great. Let's love the game. Now, when can I get multi-year contracts in my franchise mode?
We want more in franchise mode too. We sat and debated what the initial spec was going to be, and we have like an internal roadmap of what we think. We built as much as we could within the time constraint of we want to ship this game somewhere around the beginning of baseball season 2020. We built as much franchise mode as we could fit into that time frame, but we have an internal roadmap of things that we want to add to it. And we're going to add at least a couple or a few of those things to the game. We kind of said, you know, we want to do those, you know, in terms of getting the franchise mode to be a really well-rounded mode. We want there to be some community feedback involved in what happens there. So we put in the stuff that we thought formed a solid foundation, and we got a handful of things on our list. One of them is, you know, the idea of, you know, there should be some more interesting ways to lock in players for more than 1 year at a time. Keep, you know, have a franchise player that sticks around. We've got a few different ideas of ways of doing that. I'm not surprised to hear that feedback is there. And you know, other requests have been around, you know, mm-hmm. some better tracking of like aggregate stats across multiple years and some kind of highlights of, you know, what maybe your franchise players over the course of the franchise. So we're going to look at all that feedback, and we're no doubt, we told the community that just like with two Pennant Race came out, it was a brand new mode, and we said it's kind of the foundation of what we think can be something better eventually, and we did two or three patches that added major features to Pennant Race, and that's similar to what we're looking at doing with franchise here as well. So we're watching what everyone's saying, and we're gonna use that to recalibrate our internal priorities about what we think the next couple best additions to it would be, and we'll make sure that we do some of them.
Nice. This one comes from Gateway to Heaven. He sent a bunch. I'm going to pick one out. He says, what exactly does the demo allow us to do? Is it random opponents, or can we play with friends? So we chatted a little bit earlier about the demo and how it's unlimited with one mode, but maybe you can expand a little bit on when you play it, right? Is it always randoms, or can it be friends? How does that work?
The demo, as things are today, the demo lets you play public matchmaking ranked mode in Pennant Race mode. So and you know, it lets you play exhibition as well. But in terms of multiplayer, it's the public matchmaking mode. It isn't a play with friends mode. We have a custom Pennant Race mode coming later, and there's a lot of conversation about exactly how that's going to work. I'm not going to commit to anything today.
Sure, of course.
But as of right now, what's available in the demo mode that you can do a whole bunch of is playing an infinite amount of pennant race games. You can get ranked as high as you want. You can get as high as you want in the ratings, and you don't have to pay for that.
And I'm not looking for any secrets or anything like that, right? But you know, the price point is an interesting one. I would have thought that Super Mega Baseball 3 would have come out at $60. You price it at $45, if I have that right, for the full retail release. Like, what I guarantee you there were conversations about, like, sort of what made you settle at that $45 that you felt was the right, what was the right value for Super Mega Baseball 3.
That's very kind of you to say you would have assumed it should have come at 60, Rich. I appreciate that. We wanted to hit a spot with the price that communicated a game that's transitioning from being, you know, a smaller independent game to more of a more fully featured title, and a game that, you know, a price point that expressed confidence that this is a well-rounded, yeah, polished, long-running product, and then also there's no DLC at this point, and we're not going to do any of that anytime soon. And the game's not asking, there's no microtransactions. So you're not getting in there and then immediately kind of being pressured to spend more money. Not that I'm saying that doesn't work in certain games, but in our game, you know, it's $45, you get the whole thing. There's not going to be a new version coming out next year that means that you kind of feel like your version is old. So we thought 45 was a good price point, kind of that sits in the middle of, but you know, where indie titles are at, where like full 20 plus year running AAA titles are at. We felt weird. This would be a good spot. And so far it seems like it's worked out pretty well.
So as you sort of, you know, as we sit here today, right, you know, we talk about, you know, the game is now available worldwide. You're getting feedback. You've got an idea of what your roadmap is for Super Mega Baseball 3. Sort of what's your state of the Metalhead Software Union? Sort of are you continuing to focus, do you think, on the Super Mega Baseball franchise solely, or do you see potential opportunities for other kinds of things to happen? And it's not a leading question, because I get asked the same question all the time. You know, sometimes going bigger and broader is the right thing. Sometimes focusing on what you know and do best is the right thing. I'm curious, sort of, and again, not looking for secrets or anything, just, you know, what's your sort of vision for the next few years for your organization as a whole with both this franchise and potentially thinking about some other types of things?
We get asked every day if there's a chance of doing some different sports, and our kind of mindset is that, we had to do version 3 of SMB, no doubt about it, because there was so much we wanted to do after 2. And I might be starting to immediately feel like we got to do SMB 4 after reading all the feedback that comes after this launch. But we're open-minded about doing sports. We've talked in the past about how awesome it'd be to have two games going at once, for example. And we know that, you know, to your point, you know, like sticking with what you're good at. I mean, I think what we think we're good at is making, you know, sports games. There's a lot that we could carry over to a different sport. So we're going to think a lot about that. We're probably not going to go and make an adventure game or a game that's outside the sports genre, because at a certain point, you got to capitalize on what you've spent so many years trying to become good at building. So I think we stick in the sports genre. Exactly what that means for what our next game is and if there's a new sport there or if it's more baseball is somewhat TBD still.
Sure. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we hear, you know, with Press Row and in the sports game community, there's a lot of chatter about how people miss the old school arcade games, right? And I don't even mean to apply that label to Super Mega Baseball 3, because it is – I don't mean that as a derogatory comment, but I mean it's not an arcade game, but it's an arcadey kind of game in that it is, just how it plays. So, but you know, we hear a lot of people say, oh, you know, they don't make NBA Jam or they don't make NFL Blitz or they don't make these old, you know, these arcade games I love. And then, but you know, we've seen over the years little fits and starts and people don't buy them, right? So There's the perhaps the vocal minority of people who say they want these kind of games, and then there's the silent majority who may want them, but they They don't seem to buy them. But you guys have found, it seems to me, you found your niche, you found your audience, and I think you found your cadence. Do you feel, too, like you are in that right spot of the sports game market, you know, sort of finding that underserved area? Do you find that you really are serving a group of people that without your game would otherwise basically go without in this genre?
Yeah, you touched on a lot of interesting things there. You know, in turn, people talk about this game, you know, sometimes it gets called arcade a lot of the time. Some people say, oh, but it's actually a sim. Well, the truth is, I mean, the words we usually use to talk about sports games don't fit well to this game. Arcade usually means over the top power-ups. Know, may or may not be licensed, but it's going to be really over the top. There's going to be fire coming off the bat or something like that. Simulation usually means license is built to look like a broadcast presentation kind of thing. So it makes it hard to describe this game with those words. So, you know, that's fine. I understand why people sometimes have a hard time describing, and we try to help them give them a way to promote it to their friends and get more people into it. And you also touch on the other thing. I mean, I think a lot of people want to see arcade games. There's no doubt that, So do we want to see faster paced fun games, and we're trying to do that. And no doubt there's not people at all the other companies that want to see that too, but you already said it. Studios haven't necessarily found an efficient, way to monetize that and to turn that into a profitable business. It's not that people don't want it. It's just that people, what's out there has tended to follow, if you look at sports games across different sports, there's a lot of similarities there in how they're operating and, what the type of game is. So I think, it just comes down to, somebody's got to be out there exploring and finding a business model that works. I mean, it works for us. We're a smaller company, and we're not paying for expensive licenses and whatnot. And, we're a smaller company and it works for us. And I think it could work in other sports too. Does that mean you're going to see arcade games coming from AAA? I don't think so necessarily. We'll see.
There's something to be said for working for a long time to get really good at something and then being sort of known as the best kind of that thing. And that's where I strongly believe that you guys sit. I think in the games industry, it's now recognized that the Super Mega Baseball franchise is really good at what it does. And I think there's a lot of value in that, because as you know, Scott, there's not 25 baseball games that you can get on your PlayStation anymore. There's a couple and that's it. So I'm really happy that you guys have executed to your vision, delivered on the promise, right? You delivered on what you wanted to make, right? This game is bursts with the personality of you and your studio. You know, I don't feel like, and again, I sound like I'm just blowing smoke the whole time, but I mean, I don't feel like there's anything happening in Super Mega Baseball that was put into the game, despite what you wanted, right? And that, there's a lot of creative things that get made, not just video games, but television shows, movies, music, where sort of the original vision, by the time it gets sliced, diced, filtered, packaged, and distributed, is nothing like it was. But I don't feel like that at all with Super Mega Baseball. So congratulations on sort of filling, I don't want to say filling a hole, but just on sort of delivering the kind of game that a lot of people want and don't have the ability to get. So it must feel pretty good to be in that spot to where you know that on some level you're the only kind of game like that there is, right? That's got to be pretty gratifying to know that you may not be unique, but you certainly are very, very uniquely positioned with what you've done and how you've delivered it.
Yeah, thanks for saying all of that. For sure. We knew that there's two sides to it. I mean, have there been opportunities that have come up that could have, expanded the reach of the game or changed it, but also that would have changed it and had additional parties involved, in what it ultimately is, no doubt, for sure. So maybe it could be bigger, but it would be different if we had taken some of those, taken up some of those possibilities. And, you know, we're still always thinking about that stuff. But as it is, you know, it isn't just about commercial success or critical success. Sometimes it's really good for a company to have a lot of control and want to make what they're working on and know that they can do it the way that they want to do it. So we're always balancing all of those things, you know, commercial, critical, and then just, you know, internally, what do we really want to make? And if you have that balance right, then you have a happy team.
Scott Drader, the co-founder of Metalhead Software, congratulations on the launch of Super Mega Baseball 3. It's available on PlayStation 4, on Xbox One, on the Nintendo Switch, on the PC. Before I let you get out of here, anything else that you wanted to say, or you know, is there anything you want to make sure that you get out there to let people know about Super Mega Baseball 3?
I think we touched on most of the stuff. Custom pennant race is going to be wicked. And we're working super hard to get that out there. It's going to let you play with your friends cross platform and have private, kind of like an online league, private pennant races. That's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to change the way we play with our friends. That's the thing I'm most excited about that isn't already out.
Love it.
Cheers, man. Thanks so much for having me on here again. It was really good to talk to you.
You got it. Same here. Congratulations once again on the launch. Everybody, go buy Super Mega Baseball 3. Show support for indie sports game developers. And while you're there, pick up Out of the Park Baseball 21 and Franchise Hockey Manager 2. Franchise Hockey Manager 6 while you're at it. That would be nice. Scott Drader, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. How about when the new custom pennant races are launched, why don't you come back on and we'll talk about that, and we'll set up our own online league with like you, me, Submit, Owen, TJ, Chris. What do you say?
Let's do it. Let's gamble. Let's make it happen.
Let's go. Sounds crazy. Love it. Thank you for coming on. Congratulations with the launch. Enjoy your 6-pack, and then I'm sure you're going to be right back at it real quick. So thank you, sir, and have a great weekend.
Cheers, Rich. Thank you.